This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
An American Pope, baby. American Pope. Loving it. Loving it. I mean, come on, it's a big win for the people, right? Having an American Pope, bragging rights. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. Fourth and final hour on Talk Radio 1210 WPHC, 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. We shall see how this all plays out. We've talked a lot about the Pope earlier in the show today, but in case you're just joining us, first of all, where have you been? That's number one. Where you been? I've been looking for you all day. I'll give you some details on that. And that, of course, is the big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com. An American Pope, a first in papal history, first in Vatican history. And a Villanova guy, a Villanova graduate, studied mathematics at Villanova. Can't wait to find out the Pope's favorite cheesesteak. Really? Seriously? It's one of the things I want to know. Cardinal Robert Francis Prevost has now taken upon the name of Leo XIV, Pope Leo XIV. It's pretty amazing. It really is amazing. So some details for you. Cardinal Robert Francis Prevost, now Pope, spent the bulk of his career outside the United States. He represents a dignified middle of the road. All right. A dignified middle of the road. Reverend Michael Falcone, a priest in the Order of St. Augustine, previously led by Cardinal Prevost, described his mentor and friend as the dignified middle of the road. The cardinal remembers Francis and his commitment to the poor and migrants and to meeting people where they are. He told the Vatican's official news website last year that the bishop is not supposed to be a little prince sitting in his kingdom. Rather, he said, a church leader is called authentically to be humble, to be close to the people he serves, to walk with them, to suffer with them. He was appointed to run the Vatican office that selects and manages bishops globally, spent much of his life outside the United States, ordained at age 27, received a doctorate in canon law at the Pontifical University of St. Thomas Aquinas in Rome. In Peru, he was a missionary, parish priest, teacher, and bishop. As the Augustinians' leader, he visited orders around the world and speaks Spanish and Italian. And that's good because we need a pope that speaks Italian, in my opinion. It's, you know, to Rome and whatnot. He understands that the center of the Roman Catholic Church is not in the United States or the North Atlantic. His international experience, knowledge of the United States, and work inside the Vatican hierarchy. If he were not American, this would make him automatically a palpable certainty. Oh, they were saying this if he wasn't chosen. Gotcha. Often described as reserved and discreet, would depart stylistically from Francis. They say he does not have his excesses. Somebody said, blessing babies, yes, taking them in his arms, no. They expect him to continue the consultative process started by Francis to invite lay people to meet with bishops. I know that Bob believes that everybody has a right and a duty to express themselves in the church. Pope Bob. That's kind of interesting. Well, I mean, this article was written before he was chosen, so they called him Bob. Now he's the Pope. Now he's Pope Leo XIV, but at the time he was Bob. So I know that Bob believes that everybody has a right and a duty to express themselves in the church. And this was said by Reverend Mark R. Francis, a former classmate of the Cardinal of the Pope who runs the American arm of the Clerics of St. Viator, a religious order. Whereas Francis said, who am I to judge? When asked about gay clerics, Cardinal Provost has expressed less welcoming views to LGBTQ people, according to the New York Times. In a 2012 address to bishops, he lamented that Western news and media and pop culture fostered a sympathy for beliefs and practices that are at odds with the gospel. He cited the homosexual lifestyle and alternative families comprised of same-sex partners and their adopted children. Interesting. So a lot of people are calling him a liberal or a progressive, but that may not actually drive with who he is. But as bishop in Chicago, a city in northwestern Peru – oh, I'm sorry, Chiclayo – a city in northwestern Peru, he opposed a government plan to add teachings on gender in schools. The promotion of gender ideology is confusing as it seeks to create genders that don't exist, he told local news media. While praised in Peru for supporting Venezuelan immigrants and visiting far-flung communities, the cardinal has drawn criticism over his dealings with priests accused of sexual abuse. One woman in Chiclayo who said she and two other women were sexually abused by two priests as girls long before Pope was bishop accused him of mishandling an investigation and not stopping one of the priests from celebrating Mass. They opened an investigation into that, and the Vatican closed it. After a new bishop arrived, the investigation was reopened. Supporters of the new pope say he is the target of a smear campaign by members of a Peruvian-based Catholic movement that Pope Francis disbanded. In Chicago, activists say his office did not warn a nearby Catholic school that a priest, who church leaders determined had abused young boys for years, was sheltered in a monastery nearby starting in 2000. As head of the Midwestern Order of the Augustinians at the time, Cardinal Prevost would have approved the priest's move to the monastery, but there was no comment from the office regarding that allegation. Friends of the new pope say he speaks carefully. Compared with Francis, his language is more serene, where Francis might immediately speak his mind. Cardinal Prevost holds himself back a bit. So there you go. I mean, a lot will be taken. The Latin Yankee. He's known as the Latin Yankee in Rome. So, look, I mean, I'll read you what President Trump put out earlier today regarding the new pope. First American Pope. The President said, congratulations to Cardinal Robert Francis Prevost, who was just named Pope. It is such an honor to realize that he is the first American Pope. What excitement and what a great honor for our country. I look forward to meeting Pope Leo XIV. It will be a very meaningful moment. Absolutely. I wonder, you know, I wonder where the Pope is going to come down on things regarding, say, illegal immigration. You know, Francis was famous for saying that we don't build walls, even though he lived in a walled city of the Vatican. But I certainly remember that time when he came out and said that we should be building bridges, not walls. Security of the Vatican is some of the tightest security on the entire planet, by the way, as you know. But that was a little tight. I don't know. You know, I don't know if the new pope is going to want to get involved in that or not. I mean, there's a difference between giving aid and. You know, I mean, being sympathetic to the struggle of immigrants and also respecting a nation's laws, you know, give to Rome what is Rome's. So, I mean, I hope it doesn't become a issue where the Pope decides to get political with the American Pope with the American president. You know what I mean? I would hope not. But, in this day and age, who knows? I mean, what gives me hope is that there were a lot of very conservative cardinals who elected this guy, because there are 25 new countries who are part of the conclave that are And all those Cardinals seem to be more conservative. And the African Cardinals are all conservative. So I don't think it was like anything. I would doubt if they were all sitting there being like, wait, we got to pick an American Pope to take on the American president because of illegal immigration or something like that. If he's going with what is, in fact, Catholic theology, like he's not for women becoming priests. He's not for that. And as I mentioned, you know, he opposed a government plan to add teachings on gender in schools. The promotion of gender ideology is confusing because it seeks to create genders that don't exist. It works for me. In a 2012 address to bishops, he lamented the Western news media and popular culture, saying it fostered sympathy for beliefs and practices that are at odds with the gospel. He cited the homosexual lifestyle and alternative families comprised of same-sex partners and their adopted children. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe he'll prove to be liberal on the immigration issue, but conservative on those issues. It's very possible. So, I don't know. We'll have to see.
Time serving in Peru. Our Sabrina Franza sat down with a former colleague of his to talk about what a Prevost papacy might look like.
I think originally the conversation was, oh, this cardinal from Peru, but no, he's actually from Chicago. That would be a first.
That would be probably his own, in my opinion, his only ticket to the papacy.
Father Mark Francis studied with Cardinal Robert Prevost, who he says could be the first pope from the U.S., largely in part because of his work in Latin America for many years.
Cardinalis Prevost.
The two were seminary classmates at the Catholic Theological Union in Chicago from 1978 until 1982. They also both worked in Rome in the early 2000s.
He's not a showboat. He is very calm, but extremely intelligent and extremely compassionate.
What are your hopes for the next pope?
I think coming together as a Christian community that we're best able to read the signs of the times and figure out what we need to do as church.
Prevost is seen as a progressive on many social issues. Overall, many view him as a centrist. Like Pope Francis, Prevost has spent time embracing marginalized groups such as the poor. He has dual citizenship between the U.S. and Peru.
He's a person who's very sensitive and is concerned to allow everyone to have a voice.
Would that papacy look similar to that of Pope Francis?
It would be similar in terms of basic goals, I think, that the kind of style he would bring to the papacy would be calm, steady, very direct kind of guidance.
Right now, Prevost lives in Rome, overseeing the selection of new bishops all over the world. As an American, his election would be a historic surprise.
There, you know, it's interesting. Maybe he will turn out to be a huge progressive and make a lot of Catholics very unhappy if they have more conservative views. I don't know. I think it's just too early to tell. But hey, look, today's the day to celebrate the fact that for the first time in American history, we have an American pope. I mean, that's cool. That's really cool, if you ask me. We have an American pope. Never before in American history have we had an American pope. Really, really cool stuff. I just think, I don't know. It's about time, right? About time America gets a pope. So I like it. I don't know. It makes me happy. I don't know. What can I say? I'm an American. I love my country. I love the idea of an American pope because it's, you know, maybe I'm just because I'm an American. What can I say? All right. A lot more to come as we continue on the show here today. I want to remind you that we will be live June 20th at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. So make sure you come out and join us for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll have a great time together and we'll enjoy it. Oh, you know, I would be remiss, too, if I did not mention to you as we're looking at the coverage of the new pope today. There was and if you missed the interview earlier with the priest, Robert Siricchio. Go back and listen to that on the podcast. That was at the 4 o'clock hour, but it was a good chat. And you know, obviously, for conservatives, they're hoping that he will be somebody who will support the kind of at least conservative family issues that they want. You know, that's what I think they're looking for here, and you know, not waver on things like life, and not waver on things like traditional marriage, and not waver on things like boys are boys and girls are girls. I think in that part, they're going to be happy. I really do. I think in that sense, they're going to be quite happy. But we shall see as time goes on. All right, more to come as we continue along our fourth and final hour on Talk Radio 1210 WPHG. Don't go away.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
So Joe Biden went on The View today, and as you can imagine, it was a freaking disaster for Joe Biden. I don't know why Joe Biden does not go away. I don't get it. By the way, this was very funny today from the president talking about little Pete Buttigieg. This made me laugh.
And when they took over, Buttigieg, who has no clue, you know, he drives to work on his bicycle with his, in all fairness, with his husband on the back, which is a nice, loving relationship. But he didn't have a clue. This guy didn't have a clue. And he's actually a contender for president. Between him and Crockett, you can have that party. But he didn't know what he was doing. And when they took over, Buttigieg, who has no clue, you know.
That's funny. He had a loving relationship with his husband on the back. There you go. Oh, man. That just makes me laugh. I just do. Buttigieg was a disaster, wasn't he? Absolute worst. Responsible for using all the money that was supposed to go to things like air traffic control and using it for the nonsense initiatives of DEI and all the other nonsense. Here's Joe Biden and Dr. Jill Biden. I always have to say that by law. From The View today, Joe Biden is asked if reports he wasn't able to do the job are accurate. Tries to answer it, and he can't. So Dr. Jill Biden has to answer it for him instead.
Mr. President, since you left office, there have been a number of books that have come out deeply sourced from Democratic sources that claim in your final year there was a dramatic decline in your cognitive abilities in the final year of your presidency. What is your response to these allegations, or are these sources wrong?
They are wrong. There's nothing to sustain that, number one. Number two, you know, think of what we're left with. We're left with a circumstance where we had an insurrection mm-hmm. when I started. The nonsense of civil war. We had a circumstance where we were in a position that
civil war. Mm-hmm.
Well, the pandemic, because of the incompetence of the last outfit,
right.
End up over a million people dying. And we're also in a situation where we found ourselves unable to deal with a lot of just basic issues, and which I won't go into in the interest of time.
This is where his memory
and
goes.
So we
off,
went to work,
right?
And we got it done. And you know, one of the things that well, I'm
well, and Alyssa, you know, one of the things I think is that the people who wrote those.
So let's think about that, right? He goes in with his prepared talking points, January 6th, COVID, but the same stuff you've heard a billion times before, right? Then you can see he forgets what he's saying, loses his train of thought, and he starts doing that. Well, anyway, in the middle of a conversation, Joe Biden, to this day, the only person in the middle of a conversation just trying to goes, anyway, just completely forgets. And then Joe Biden has to jump in. Joe Biden has to jump in. Back it up like, I don't know, like 10 seconds or so, like a little bit. Maybe like, yeah, like that's good. Let's
take issues, and which I won't go into in the interest of time. And so we went to work, and we got it done. And, you know, one of the things
Alyssa, you know, one of the things I think is that the people who wrote those books were not in the White House with us, mm-hmm. and they didn't see how hard Joe worked every single day. Mm-hmm. I mean, he'd get up, he'd put in a full day, and then at night he would, I'd be in bed, you know, reading my book, and he was still on the phone reading his briefings, working with staff. I mean, it was nonstop. The White House.
Let me explain too. At this moment, Joe Biden just sitting there, just gazing off into the audience with his arms folded. You know what I mean? This is such a bad look for him. It's like in the BBC interview yesterday where we went over that when he's like, well, you know, I mean, anyway. He just forgets what he's saying. He just forgets. It's amazing.
Being president is not like a job. It's a lifestyle. It's a life that you live. You live it 24 hours a day. That phone can ring at 11 o'clock at night or 2 in the morning. It's constant. Mm-hmm. You never leave it. Mm-hmm. And Joe worked really hard. I think he was a great president. Mm-hmm. And if you look at things today... If you look at things today, give me Joe Biden anytime.
Just like a cabinet meeting, she's doing the show. Just like exactly like a cabinet meeting, Joe Biden is jumping in to save the day and run the show. It's Edith Wilson all over again. I mean, that's exactly what we're talking about here. The man could not do the job. Could not do the job. So, you know, there's more stuff coming in about the Pope. This won't make you happy if you are somebody who's conservative. Let's see here now if I can pull this up here. The new Pope didn't tweet once in 2024. In 2025, he's posted 5 times in which he criticized J.D. Vance's views on Catholicism and Jesus, posted an article opposing Trump's immigration policies, retweeted twice about the Pope's health, retweeted a criticism of Trump and Bukele's laughter at Kilmar Abrego Garcia, according to at least somebody that I saw on social media. So there's a lot, like I said, there's a lot of things back and forth. You know, everybody's hoping that they can learn a little bit here. He's from Chicago. So somebody said, well, he was involved with the Democrat machine in Chicago. Well, that's everybody in Chicago. I said, yeah, I jokingly said earlier today, he's from Chicago. I wouldn't be surprised if dead Cardinals voted for the guy. He's from Chicago. But, you know, I mean, look, you hope for the best. You hope that you don't become Pope if you don't know how to play politics, obviously. But anyway, back to Biden's views on this is another terrible experience from The View today.
All the benefits. How do you lead the world without having the best infrastructure in the world? How do you lead the world without having the best health care in the world? How do you lead the world without having the best education system in the world? How do you lead the world when you don't have that done?
Mashaba. Let's one more time here.
All the projects, the benefits. How do you lead the world without having the best infrastructure in the world? How do you lead the world without having the best health care in the world? How do you lead the world without having the best education system in the world? How do you lead the world when you don't have that done?
Landshark? Candygram? Landshark? There you go. Biden is a disaster. I don't know why he just doesn't go away. I don't understand what the point of him coming out. I really don't. I don't understand what the point of him coming out is. And just go on the beach and build sandcastles. Stop speaking. Why does he keep speaking? That's what I don't understand this. It's like, go hide and go to Delaware, build sandcastles, play with your invisible friends on the beach, talk to dead world leaders, and have a good time. So I'm just saying, you know. That would be for Democrats. I mean, fine for me if you keep going out there. But do you remember how I keep telling you that Joe Biden, for his legacy, over and over and over again, wants to be the only guy that's ever beaten Donald Trump? Remember I've said that to you before? And I've said that he was happy to see Kamala Harris go down. That's why he did all the things he did to help bring her down. During the campaign, like the time he called Trump supporters garbage and he interrupted one of her live events with a press conference. First time he ever did that, walking into the White House press briefing room to talk to the press, completely taking the attention away from Kamala Harris. Because he wants to say he's the only guy who beat Trump and he could have beat him if he stayed in the race. That's exactly what he said today on The View.
You had previously said that you thought that you would have won. Since then, Donald Trump won all the battleground states and made inroads with almost every major demographic, from working class voters to Hispanic men to black men. Knowing what you know now, do you think you would have beat him?
Yeah, he's still got 7 million fewer votes.
Yes.
Okay. A lot of people didn't show up. Mm-hmm. Number one. Number two.
What?
They're very close in those toss-up states. It was it wasn't a slam dunk. Mm-hmm. And look, every time I've been on the show, which I've been fortunate to be on more than once. Thanks for having me. Is that we talk? You guys don't focus on as much, and I think it's good on polling numbers, but. Mm-hmm. Let me put it this way.
Why?
He's had the worst 100 days any president's ever had.
Yeah, that's a fact. Yeah.
I would not say honesty's been a strong point.
Let me just also make the point for you today that Joe Biden has no idea what he's talking about with the numbers and the votes. And it's impossible that more people turned out to vote in 2020 than 2024. It's just scientifically impossible. It's an absolute lie. No doubt about it. Then there was this again. No matter what, Trump would have won. So which is it, pal? You would have beat him or not? What he's saying? He's saying two things. On the one hand, he's saying that Trump would have won no matter what. And then on the other hand, he's turning around and saying that he could have beat Trump.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. President, some have even argued that leaving the race and endorsing your Vice President Harris, over 100 days before the election hampered her campaign.
Well, you know,
what do you say to those critics?
I say, number one, that there were still 6 full months. She was in every aspect, every decision I made. Yeah. Every decision we made, and I don't think I hope I don't sound the wrong way. I don't think anybody thought we'd be successful as we were. I don't think anybody thought we'd pass the Recovery Act. I don't think anybody thought we'd deal with the chips and science act. I don't think anybody think we'd have all we got done in a close race. Think about it.
Yeah.
We got more major legislation passed to fundamentally change the direction of the country than any president has in a long, long time.
Decades.
And so we're in a situation where we came to office and we agreed on two things. One, I was sick and tired of trickle-down economics. And my dad used to say, not a whole lot trickle down on his kitchen table. Mm-hmm. And so we built the economy from the middle out and the bottom up. The strongest economy in the world when we left. That's not hyperbole. That's a fact.
Sure it is. That's a fact. That's a fact, Jack. That's why the Democrats lost, because the economy was so incredibly, incredibly strong. Is that what it is? Huh? Huh? Ex-CNN hack Chris Cillizza finally now admitting that there was a cover-up by Team Biden. Quote, I think there is now ample evidence that there was a cover-up on Joe Biden's actual physical and mental condition by his aides in the White House. There's been a ton of reporting on it. Too much, I think, to dismiss it. Cillizza told Fox News Digital in an email. While Cillizza believes Biden's aides were hiding the truth from the American people, the former CNN political analyst somehow claims the press wasn't part of the cover-up, even as he notes that they easily surrendered under the pressure. He says, instead, I think the Biden team made it really hard to ask questions about his health. They shamed you, said you didn't like him, etc. Cillizza said, noting that many reporters, including himself, let that be that. Because you guys were all there to protect him. That's why. That's why you guys were all there that's what you were doing. Cillizza put out a video in December admitting Team Biden did a good job of hiding it for a long time. But journalists, and I put myself here, you've got to. We should have been pushier. We should have. I should have. I don't want to speak for everyone. I should not have let the shame campaign to make you feel bad for asking the question get to me. Oh, really? Really? No kidding. Give me a break. These guys covered this up. The media covered this up. It was the greatest single political cover-up of our lifetime, and these guys covered it up. All right? These guys covered it up in the media. You know, one of the ways we'll know really just how liberal this Pope is going to turn out to be will be if the mainstream corporate legacy media is gushing about him. So, you know, watch for that tonight. Watch for that tomorrow. We'll have, you know, obviously a lot of analysis on this today. I'm always going to try to be optimistic, and, you know, certainly today's the day to celebrate the fact that it's an American Pope. I'm nervous, as I mentioned earlier to you today. Some gives me some good signs, and some things make me nervous. I hope he does not tango into politics, because unless you tear down the walls of the Vatican, you really have no right to say we can't have walls. And, you know, you can't, I mean, the Vatican City is not, it's not like you can just live there. You know what I mean? Like, you can't just live in St. Peter's Square. I've been there, but you can't just live there. So I don't really want to hear the lecture on following our illegal, our laws on immigration. I don't want to hear it. I really don't. I have no appetite to hear it. None whatsoever. All right. More to come as we conclude our fourth and final hour. Don't go away.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Big trade deal today. That's right. A big trade deal with the UK. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. Our fourth and final hour on a very, very busy day today on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Well, every day is busy in Trump's America, obviously. The president made the announcement today of a big trade deal between America and the UK. So I still hold the grudge for them burning down the White House. But hey, this is progress. Take a listen.
I just want to begin by saying that this is a very special day because it's Victory Day, World War II, May 8th. And just by happenstance, we have the Prime Minister on the phone, and we were great allies in that. And it's very unusual that the trade deal comes due, and we signed it up on the same day that we had a great victory, the greatest victory of them all. So we are talking more and more about Victory Day, because we were a big part of it, and so was the UK. And it's just, I guess, I don't know what you call it. It's just incredible that that day is the same day that we signed a tremendous trade deal for both countries. So I'm going to begin by just adding that we just concluded the rare earth deal with Ukraine. That's been fully ratified and approved by their legislative branches, and so we appreciate that, and I'll be speaking with the president in a little while, a little bit later.
Good stuff today. Good announcement. A trade deal between the UK, and I'm all for deals, baby. Give me some deals. That's what I want to hear. I like deals. Deals are good. Deals are very, very good. If you want some details on what's in this deal, so let me give you a little bit of a breakdown from fact sheet that we got on this. By the way, one more thing on the Pope from Ryan James Gerdersky. Trying to fit the ideology of the Pope in the context of American politics is a fruitless endeavor. If you're Catholic, pray that he's a good steward of the church and defends the throne of Christ as the successor of Peter. Well said. I think that's good. Unfortunately, we live in a political time, so everything is political and, you know, there you go. But here's the fact sheet on this UK deal. Establishing a new paradigm for our special relationship today on the 80th anniversary of Victory Day for World War II, President Trump and Prime Minister Keir Starmer announced a historic trade deal providing American companies unprecedented access to UK markets while bolstering U.S. national security. The deal includes billions of dollars of increased market access for American exports, especially in agriculture, dramatically increasing access for American beef, ethanol, and virtually all of the products produced by our great farmers. The UK will reduce or eliminate numerous non-tariff barriers that unfairly discriminated against American products. This is now turning out to be a really great day for both countries. Prime Minister Starmer said this is going to boost trade between and across our countries. It's going to not only protect jobs, but create jobs, opening market access. The trade deal will significantly expand U.S. market access in the UK, creating a $5 billion opportunity for new exports for U.S. farmers, ranchers, and producers. This includes more than $700 million in ethanol exports and $250 million in other agricultural products like beef. It commits the countries to work together to enhance industrial and agricultural market access. It closes loopholes and increases U.S. firms' competitiveness in the U.K.'s procurement market. It ensures streamlined customs procedures for U.S. exports. It establishes high standard commitments in the areas of intellectual property, labor, and environment. It maximizes the competitiveness and secures the supply chain of U.S. aerospace manufacturers through preferential access to high-quality U.K. aerospace components. It creates a secure supply chain for pharmaceutical products. That's a big deal. The reciprocal tariff rate of 10%, as originally announced on Liberation Day, is in effect. The United States will agree to an alternative arrangement for the Section 232 tariffs on U.K. autos. So we'll see what that means. The U.S.-U.K. deal proves strategic recalibration works. Trump's initial tariff pressure forced London to the table, securing $5 billion in new ag exports and slashing non-tariff barriers that blocked American beef and ethanol. The automotive carve-out, first 100,000 cars at 10%, shows targeted leverage. Critics say chaos would sink markets, but this pivot demonstrates disciplined negotiation, protects key industries while opening foreign markets. The 125% meat tariffs are gone. This isn't just a trade win. It's a blueprint for dismantling globalist barriers through strength, proving American first, deals that actually put U.S. producers first. So there we go. It's a big day. Good deal. I mean, I'm happy. I have been saying for a while now, give us some deals. Let's have some positive deals. Let's announce them. Let's make everybody happy, and today's that day. So that's good. Getting rid of these trade barriers benefits everybody. So if you're a free trade person, you should be happy about this. So that's good. UK tariffs were 5.1%. They're now at 1.8%. US tariffs were 3.4%. Now they're at 10%. And unprecedented access to UK market, ethanol, beef, cereal, fruits, vegetables, animal feed, tobacco, soft drinks, shellfish, textiles, chemicals, machinery, and more. They're projecting $6 billion in tariff revenue and new market access of $5 billion to exports. Somebody said, so why did Britain agree to this exactly? The UK is less than 3% of trade to the United States, and the deal equates to Americans continuing to pay 10% tariffs unless they're buying a luxury vehicle and U.S. citizens paying less. That's some of the criticism of this that's being passed on. I'm trying to think what we really buy from the United Kingdom. I'm trying to think. Honestly, I don't know. I'm not – let's see. American imports from the UK. Let's see. The largest commodities imported – mechanical power generators and aircraft. The UK imported a lot of fuel from the United States and that. So, yeah, I'm trying to think, like, what do you buy that's really made in England? Mechanical power generators, apparently. That's what I'm looking at here. Pharmaceuticals. Pharmaceutical products make up a lot of that, too. The UK imports chemicals from the United States, vitamins, antibiotics, and vaccines, as well as products such as bandages, wadding, and gauze, probably from like Johnson & Johnson. Machinery and transport equipment was also the main goods export from the UK to the United States. Most of that was, main commodity imported from and exported to the United States in 2023 was machinery and transport equipment. All right. Well, I don't know. I mean, it seems like it's a better deal for the United States than it is for the UK. I mean, I think. But, you know, you could argue that 10% tariff is going to get passed on to the people that are buying the machinery parts and everything else. Certainly that's, you know, a concern. The president doesn't see it that way. And people are, you know, I'd like to see the tariff reciprocal to the tariff that we impose or they impose on us. I'm a little surprised by that, but obviously they're agreeing to it. If they pass those costs on to the United States, the 10% costs, then if prices go up on those goods, we're certainly going to hear about it. No doubt about that. Here's the president and Keir Starmer delivering some remarks on this today from the White House. Take a listen.
I'd like to introduce him now to say a few words. Mr. Prime Minister, please take it away.
Thank you, Mr. President, Donald. And
Donald.
This is a really fantastic, historic day in which we can announce this deal between our two great countries. And I think it's a real tribute to the history that we have of working so closely together. Can I pay tribute, Donald, to your negotiating team as well, particularly yes. Howard and Jameson, who've done an incredible job, a very professional job, and my team as well, two yes. negotiating teams have worked at pace now for a number of weeks to bring in this deal today. Really important deal. This is going to boost trade between and across our countries. It's going to not only protect jobs, but create jobs, opening market access. And as you say, Donald, the timing couldn't be more apt, because not only was it 80 years ago today that victory came for Europe after and at the end of the Second World War, but of course on that day the UK and the US stood together as the closest of allies. And Donald, I think even down to the hour, because you may or may not know that it was about this time of day exactly 80 years ago that Winston Churchill announced victory in Europe, and that led to great celebrations across Europe, across America, but particularly in the United Kingdom. Literally people going out into the street, putting bunting up, going up to the palace. And so to be able to announce this great deal on the same day, 80 years forward, almost at the same hour, and as we were 80 years ago, with the UK and the US standing side by side, I think is incredibly important and makes this truly historic. That close relationship has endured over those 80 years. As you know, Donald, when it comes to defence and security and intelligence sharing, of course, there are no two countries that are closer than our two countries.
So, all right, you know, I mean, look, he's happy. They're good. Trade deals. There you go. So, you know, I mean, we should all be happy about it. And we'll see what the implications are. You know, you heard EJ Antoni earlier in the show. He's very happy about it. He feels really good about this. So good. You know, I don't like, you know, if we can get rid of any trade barriers and anything like that, I'm all for it. I really am. I'm all for it. Before I go, I just have to mention this to you as well. Apparently now, Hilaria Baldwin has a new book out. Did you know this? Hilaria Baldwin? I saw this in the New York Post this morning. Hilaria Baldwin has a new book out. By the way, I'm supposed to be on Fox News tomorrow in the 2 o'clock hour with Sandra Smith. Hopefully I don't get bumped again by the president. But anyway, we'll do that, and then I'll do the show from New York tomorrow. So, but yeah, Hilaria's book of fiction, manual not included, Hilaria Baldwin. And she just goes on and basically just goes on and promotes herself the entire time. There's certain people I wish as a country we could just get to shut the hell up. Hilaria Baldwin, Hillary, who's from like Jersey, who's not, she's a fake Spaniard. Her and her husband, Alec, I'd love to have just shut it up. Zip it. Enough. That's what I'm saying right there. Enough. All right. Yeah, Villanova is about to be insufferable. That's a really great point. All the memes that are out there today. Very, very funny stuff. This, by the way, is the top story of the day today, brought to you by my buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, VeneriaDental.com. All right, Fox Across America is up next with Jimmy Failla. Have a great rest of your night. Thanks for listening. I'll see you soon.